Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of the VCR Repairman. I'm your host, Clay Fair, alongside my co-host, Jacob Mueller. And today we have our first guest, Grace Caput.
Hey guys, thank you all so much for having me. I have my own radio show. I host Beats Blitz on Sundays, so tune in. But thank you guys for having me. I'm super excited.
Wait, real quick before we move on, what time on Sunday is your show?
12 to 1
12 to 1, there you go.
Phenomenal plugging going on right there.
Oh, yeah.
Had to, had to.
Exactly.
Real quick before we launch into our discussion, I just want to like check in on everyone and everyone had a good week and doing good. Anything you guys want to like say really quickly?
Yeah,
Are you
no,
how are
go
you
ahead.
doing,
I had a
Jacob?
good week.
It's been great. It's been busy. I can't believe it's Friday. We record on Friday. My bad.
Yeah,
I
no, it's good.
don't know what y'all said.
Yeah, I've had a good week too. Generally, we had kind of, it was kind of our spring break this week up here. Even though we don't really get to go home for it, so we had a couple of days off. So that was nice. And yeah, I didn't get a lot of sleep. Watched the finale of WandaVision. A little bit underwhelming, but you know, it is what it is.
And
But yeah. I'm ready to talk about the movie for this
Saturday Night
week,
Fever,
the Saturday Night Fever.
which was gave me fever dreams.
Oh boy.
Do you want to give like a quick summary?
Chris, do you want to give a summary? I'm not gonna put you on the spot, but
I can give a summary.
you suggested the movie, so I'm gonna
Yeah,
put you on the
I
spot for it.
suggested the movie because of the Bee Gees soundtrack, and let me just say that is so disjointed with the actual movie. It's kind of crazy. But yeah, brief synopsis. You've got this Italian kid growing up in Bay
New York.
Ridge, New York. His name's Tony. He works at a paint store, and basically his only release is like the disco club on Saturday nights, so Saturday Night Fever. Yeah, there's some girl drama and whatnot, some gang drama and some gang violence, but I think the general message is him realizing that that's not a place he wants to be and that's not where he wants to stay, and he doesn't want to get left behind by the rest of the world and end up with the same guys he's always been with, the same guys he doesn't enjoy being around, living in the same part of town he doesn't like. And so the ending of the movie is just him basically saying that he's gonna try really hard to get out of there because otherwise he'll end up dead or unhappy just like the rest of his friends.
Yeah, pretty much hits the nail on the head. Anything you want to add, Jacob?
I don't want to be very opinionated in my synopsis of the film, but it very much feels like two movies. One is a disco movie, which I think is the movie that everyone knows Saturday Night Fever as, and then the other movie is this half funny sometimes, like crime drama kind, and just like young people making decisions kind of movie. And yeah, it is, it's there's a lot of things going on. That's what I have to say about that.
And you know, I think that's a really good thing to point out, and that's something that Grace and I last night were actually like reading a review of the movie just because we had finished it and we didn't know what to think. And it talked about the same thing that you mentioned about it being two movies, and I think the best way to describe it is you have on one half, like you said, this like really fun Bee Gees like disco dancing flick where everyone's just like jamming, and then the second half of the movie is like Taxi Driver, and it's like a really weird combination of things together that I don't know if it works or not, but it's not like anything I've ever seen
Yeah.
before.
And I think there's a couple things that go into it being remembered as a cult classic, and also like just the soundtrack being disjointed. The first thing being when the Bee Gees were commissioned to make the soundtrack for this movie, they weren't given a script. They weren't told what it was about. So they were actually in the process of writing all these songs that they wrote and released on the Saturday Night Fever album were actually going into their own album that they were making, and so they just gave him some killer tunes, and the producers put them in the wrong places in the film, but I gotta say. And the other thing that I was reading is this movie obviously was released full version, full rated R version in movie theaters, but when it hit, like, you know, like cable television and everything, they made a couple censored versions that were like PG, PG-13, and so a lot of people, especially like people my mom's generation who were born in the 70s, as they were kids, they probably watched it on cable, and so they missed all of the assault at the end. Oops, spoiled it. They missed the gang violence. They missed the cussing and awful slurs. And they just remember it as a super hip, like, you know, disco movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't think about it that way, but a lot of people do really experience their movies through TV because not everyone goes out to see every movie in theaters, right? And certainly not now, you know, streaming services.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really good point, and I didn't think of that. That's probably some of the reason that a lot of the reception just doesn't think of it as this crazy, crazy movie about so many different things. It's just like, it's more centered on the parts that are PC, pretty much.
And I think that's like an interesting point to legacy and the way the movie's remembered, because like, I don't think we would have picked this movie in particular to talk about on this podcast if we like knew what it was actually going to be about. I think we were just like, oh, we like the Bee Gees, and it's going to be like a fun musical that we can just like talk about. And then you're watching, you're like, oh my god, like, this is insane. But so that's interesting. Maybe those, like, Grace, those censored cuts that you were mentioning, maybe they, I guess it seems like they've kind of like shaped the legacy of the movie, which is really interesting.
And the album was so popular, second best selling album of all time. That sucker was at the top of the Billboard charts for 180 consecutive weeks.
Jeez.
So, I know, right?
Wow.
You should have got...
I mean...
Oh, I'm sorry, Jim.
Oh, go ahead, Clay.
No, you go.
All I was going to say is that More Than a Woman is a phenomenal song that is so underutilized in this movie. And that's all I have to say.
Was that their dance theme song?
It was. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And I can't say that, like, especially because they get so upstaged by the group that comes right after them in that final dance scene. It just feels, it feels so toned down. Like, I would rock out to More Than a Woman on the dance floor. And they're just kind of like, let's be beautiful.
Let's make out in front of everyone.
Let's be graceful. Yeah, let's make out in front of everyone. That's literally what they do. Ugh.
I feel like some of the music is also used really weirdly, because I feel like, I don't know if I'm remembering this totally correctly, but I feel like in the first 20 minutes of the movie, they use Staying Alive like three separate times. Like, I don't know if you guys remember that, but
creative that intro was, like, with all the camera angles.
Camera angles are insane for half the movie. Like,
it's so true. It's
like,
so
I
true.
That opening scene that you're mentioning, Grace, I was like, noticed, like, I can't remember the exact number, but I think there was like four or five shots of John Travolta's shoes. Like, it would just like show him walking and cut back to his shoes like multiple times.
Like, Tarantino stuff.
I was like, why? And there were so many camera angles that were like, it looked like the camera was like attached to his hip, and it was like just like looking straight up at him, and it looks so weird. Like, I don't know who the director of photography on this movie is, but I would like to have a discussion with him, because he made some very...
It was certainly very creative. Let's just say that. It was very creative. And that's... Okay, so, like, my only research... You know, you guys definitely did more research for this than I did. My only research was watching a Siskel and Ebert clip on how they felt about the film. They both really loved it.
Mm.
And Siskel was basically saying it felt so real, and I just didn't get that out of it.
I just didn't get that out of it.
I mean, like, sure, there was a lot of seriousness that, like, it is true, I guess, of real life. But like the way it's shot, like the way you, like, as we're describing, like, it's not shot in a realist manner, like, you know, any, like, many other movies that I've been, you know, watching lately. Like, it's just.
Yeah.
It tries to be very surreal a lot at times. I just think the film has a lot of, you know, I think we said this, Clay and I would talked about the film a little bit over text, and we were just like, what is this film? What is, does this film know what it's trying to be? And I just, I don't know.
Yes,
I don't know.
I don't understand, after having watched that, I don't understand if it was just an observational movie, like observing the culture at that time, or if it was a critique, because some parts of it came off as like, this is the wrong thing. Like, obviously condemning what the boys were doing and saying, but then other parts just seemed almost impartial to what was going on, particularly like with the assault of both women at the end. So I don't understand if there, I don't know, to your point, if there was something that the movie was trying to be, or if they were, they
yeah,
didn't do very well.
Maybe that was like, because I feel like part of the point of the movie was like, these people, like, they're living in a terrible situation. And like, I think one thing that drove this home for me was when he's working in the paint store. Because we'll get scenes of John Travolta's character working in the paint store. And he gets fired at one point, and he comes back, and the manager's like telling him how like useful he is, and he's like, yeah, like, look at these guys. They've been with me for like 20 years just working in my paint store. And that's kind of like what hit it home for me, is that these people live in like super like bad conditions, the woman in the movie especially. And so we get this taxi driver half of the movie that's examining that like real, I suppose, aspect of their life. And then they have like, or the point that John Travolta's character kind of makes is like the disco and the dance floor is like his release from that life, where he can like get away and like dance and not worry about his troubles. So I feel like what they were, I obviously don't know, but the way I read it was that the difference in tone is there to exaggerate that dichotomy, but I feel like they kind of went overboard with it, and like the tones are like, I think I see what they're trying to do with it, but for me it feels like the tones are so divorced from each other that in theory they make sense, but like in practice, they don't mesh well into one movie, I think.
Yeah, I was just gonna butt in and say, you're mentioning Taxi Driver a couple times. I was watching that movie and basically thinking, this movie would be amazing if Scorsese was directing it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why, but I just felt like he would, and maybe this is me just having watched a lot of Scorsese and being a little bit of a fanboy there. Not that his movies are, like, something to, like, oh yes, good examples of masculinity or humanity, but he's a good movie maker, and he, again, that I get that Taxi Driver tone in this. I also get a little bit of Casino in the way that it's kind of, it is this industry, like the disco. I don't know why it kind of reminds me of Casino a little bit, but either way, I just felt like those tones could have been balanced a lot better. It also could have been somewhat more personal, and it was a character study, but at the same time it wasn't. It was kind of impartial, as you said, in certain scenes. I just didn't feel like I think the moment you mentioned, Clay, where he basically realizes that everyone's been working at that paint store for, you know, 15, 18 years, and you see it on Travolta's face, but I just don't think you get enough moments of that to like really, like, it's not that Travolta's bad, I just don't think he's given the material to like have a really set and well thought out character progression over the course of the movie, so that you understand his motivations at most times.
Yeah. So
but
I
maybe
say...
that's just me.
Oh yeah, carry on.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, this is Travolta's first movie, so they really took a risk putting him in, because he just did TV shows before this, right? Which is, I think, part of the reason they commissioned the Bee Gees for it, for the soundtrack, because they had to have something to make the movie at least appear good in public eye, right? Because you're just taking this guy who's only done TV shows, you're not sure how good he's going to do. It's like pulling Miley Cyrus from Hannah Montana and putting her on this big production and saying, oh, she's just going to be the star. And everyone would be like, okay, we're just not going to watch the movie. So I will say that his acting obviously wasn't great. He didn't portray. He didn't show any kind of like emotional intelligence in
Yeah.
scenes like the paint shop scene. He didn't convey what he needed to, but I think honestly for his first movie and seeing how he did progress over his career, not bad. And I think he was a lot better than
Yeah.
their choice for Stephanie, in terms of conveying like what was going on and what we were supposed to feel. So yeah, just a short
For me, the main like issue with that isn't, I don't think it's really Travolta, like I think you were getting at this one, Grace. Like, I don't think you can really blame Travolta. I think this might be a hot take, but I think this movie has a terrible script. Like the interactions between
I have
people,
to
like,
agree.
don't make sense. Like, they don't
No.
seem like,
That dinner scene,
yeah.
I don't know
Oh
if you guys
yes,
remember
great.
that first dinner scene, it's comedic. The movie
Yeah.
is comedic when it doesn't need to, or when it's not trying to be. I don't think. I don't think this movie is genuinely trying to be a comedy, but sometimes its lines are so bad that it is. I look like Al Pacino. Attica.
But yeah, like
Like,
I guess I suppose by the end of the movie you could point to Travolta and kind of say, okay, like they at least have like a good concept for a character here. Like I can see what they were trying to do with this, but like I can't remember the name of really any other character in the movie, and I don't feel like any other person is like fleshed out to be a whole. Like they're just all kind of like, in one way or another, they're props. Which kind of is lame. I wish they had given a little more characterization to maybe some of the women in the movie or his friends and made them like more of like a personal force other than just like I said earlier, like a prop for Travolta to interact with and around. You know what I mean?
I'm also gonna say like
I was just get oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say like as far as like character study, if we were trying to delve into like who this character is, like Tony, that I feel like they stopped halfway through the arc. Like he's just now starting to realize how assault is bad, how his friend dying is bad, but they don't continue with that. It's just it stops like halfway through the development, like at the very end. Which is weird. I thought that was a weird place to end it. And I don't know if they were trying to go for that, like trying to get the feeling of no resolve or no resolution, or if they genuinely thought like, oh, he's completed his character arc.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean I know there's a lot of movies that you have a main character and it kind of tries to go against the grain and ends with, well, this main character didn't really change a lot at all over the course of the film. Kind of just watched, a minute in their life or whatever. And in a sense, I think the film sometimes has that observant tone that kind of suggests that you're kind of just watching events happen. But at the same time, like, I also just don't feel like I think one of the things that is very, okay, I'm gonna mention Nomadland because I've seen it recently, and we may talk about it in the future on this, but it's a movie where not a lot happens, but you feel like you know the main character by the end, whether she's changed or not at all. I just don't feel like I know John Travolta's character, and he and like you said, like all of these background characters aren't named really. I mean, they're named, but you don't know who they are because there's no plot attention given to them. There's tons of plot attention given to John Travolta, and I still don't feel like I know who he is, whether he's changing or not. And I feel like that's a testament to maybe the weakness of the script. I j just doesn't give me a good picture of who he is, what he's trying to do.
Which is evidenced by us calling him John Travolta. Like at the end of the movie, I was still going, "Why is
Yeah.
John doing
Yeah. And
that?"
I also feel that, like, because I don't think this movie really looks that good, and I think that might be another issue that contributes to that. Because I know that I've seen plenty of movies. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I'm sure you guys will like see what I'm saying. But like, they convey that sort of character change and they can convey who someone is visually, or just by showing how they like think and grapple with things, like through the camera and how they're blocking and what angle they're using it. And so sometimes you don't even really need a script to kind of convey who someone is or like how they're feeling in a moment. But I feel like just the shot composition and stuff is so ridiculous and like nonsensical sometimes that it also doesn't really allow you to empathize with anyone on that level either, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I just think this movie is so built to be a character study, and it's just not, like,
Yeah.
especially because it seems like that's the direction they're trying to go, and then I don't know, like, just if you changed the tone and made it a little bit more personal, or like followed him around a little bit more in a little bit more personable way, and you know, maybe the director tells John Travolta to portray some scenes differently, and they film a few scenes differently. Like, I'm not saying the entire movie would have been changed, but I think I would have felt more clear on the tone and what they were going for.
And I feel like, I don't know, because part of me that I see where it seems like it's leaning into character study, but I also felt like with the two girls and the drama therein, like with Stephanie, I felt like at least, especially towards the end when he shows up at her door and she lets him in, like I felt like it was trying to go into like a half romantic, or just trying to show, I felt like that might have been the main point, trying to show that relationship developing, and him developing along with that relationship. Obviously it turned into friendship, but so I feel like there was the character study part, but I also am not sure if that's really what they were trying to do. I feel like they were trying to show Stephanie and Tony's relationship developing. And I don't know if this was a script issue as much as it was like actor and actress choice. I feel like the woman who played Stephanie was not strong enough to match Travolta on screen. And I think that's part of why it feels to me like it was trying to be a character study, just because John Travolta was so magnetic on screen. He's that guy, he's the attractive guy. They put the camera on him so much, and she's just not strong enough to be in that role. Stephanie, so.
One thing that I picked up on that I'm kind of interested in talking about is I feel like and I feel like this movie also kind of responds to like conventions of the musical genre as a whole, which is interesting. Like when I really picked up on it was at the end of the movie when they are giving John Travolta the award for winning the dance competition. They call him like the Fred Astaire of whatever, like
Oh,
they
of
have
Bay Ridge
a
or
bit, yeah,
whatever.
they call him the Fred Astaire of Bay Ridge. And that was really interesting to me because then I started thinking more about it, and I think this, like the central relationship dynamic in this movie is really actually similar to a few Fred Astaire movies I've watched in the musicals class I'm in, like Swing Time, where like Swing Time's the one that pops into my head, but like those movies are about, Fred Astaire's kind of like this unlikable guy, and he like meets this beautiful girl, usually played by Ginger Rogers. And he basically, over the course of the movie, he'll, for whatever reason, he ha like finds a way to start dancing with her. And over time, they grow a relationship and like get married or end up together at the end. And so that structure is something that feels totally like mimicked here in this movie. But then by the end, it feels like they're rejecting it by, in the end, like, we have horrible violence occur, and no one ends up with anyone in that sense. So in that way, like, I don't know if you guys have anything else to add to that, but it was just interesting to me thinking about this film as a musical and maybe ways in which it like responds or challenges that genre as a whole.
Yeah, I can jump in and just say that, I'm not taking a musicals class. I am taking an intro to film studies class, and one of the things we've been talking about pretty recently is kind of what old Hollywood movies look like, from I don't know, 1917 to 19 whatever. And generally, like, part of that structure is, you know, there's two main goals for your protagonist, and, you know, one of them's romantic. And by the end of the movie, very, very often, you know, that romantic goal is met. And I think one of the things that I thought was interesting about Grace's point is that, you know, kind of trying to talk about it as a character study, or is it like this relationship thing? And it was funny, I was kind of unsure where the movie was going until he meets, oh my goodness, I'm forgetting her name now. His dance partner at the end.
Stephanie,
I can't believe I'm forgetting your name. Stephanie, yes, yeah. Yes, Stephanie. Until he meets Stephanie, I just feel like the movie was a little, like, I didn't know what it was going to be, and then I felt like I knew what it was going to be then. And, it subverted my expectations, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it was interesting that that plot didn't end up necessarily being romantic in the way that one would normally think it would. And I think that that was an interesting and good choice that they made, that they tried, again, kind of as you were saying, to differentiate themselves, you know, from the average Hollywood movie or the average musical.
And, you go, Race, I'm sorry.
It was absolutely a plot twist, honestly, to me, especially because, like, he's riding the subway. This is, like, the last two scenes. He's riding the subway up to her house, and they have the Bee Gees, How Deep Is Your Love, playing. And so we just saw him try to assault her. We saw his other friend assaulted in the car where he's sitting, not saying anything. We just saw his other friend die, and now he's in a subway, and it's How Deep Is Your Love, and he shows up at her house and their friends. It's very odd choice. It felt very disjointed.
The How Deep Is Your Love thing made me laugh. I can't lie. I was so taken aback by that. Just like, it didn't make sense. They just had to get another Bee Gees song in.
Yes, and the way they introduced it, like, he's sitting in the subway, the lights turn on, and then the song starts. Like, what?
Grace, I have a question for you as our resident BG historian here on the show. I don't know if you know this, so I might be putting you on the spot, but after watching this, I was really curious if you knew how they reacted to, like, act. Because you said they didn't have a script of the movie. Do you know how they reacted to, like, actually seeing their work in the film, or, like, how they felt about it?
No, I'm sure. If I was very good. And I'm not. I wish I were. I would have some mixed feelings, because on the one hand, that album slapped. And it slapped so hard that skyrocketed them to fame. Rich. This went crazy. But on the other hand, they were going to use those songs in their own album. Might have slept on its own and done that well. And it just got put over an assault scene. Like, so I would have mixed feelings.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I don't know. I don't know the music industry well enough, but maybe it being in the movie, whether or not it was a good choice for a movie, but being in the movie maybe gave it some more boost up to the top of the charts and stuff. So I don't know how much that helped, but I would be feeling like, okay, well, on the other hand, fantastic, love, Rich, but on the other hand, I cannot believe they took my music and put it over this movie. So I don't know what they were feeling, but that's how I would have felt.
I can't say that I would have. I don't know too much about the Bee Gees, but I feel like I might have been a bit taken aback by seeing my work in that final product.
Yeah, I think if I were the Bee Gees, I would be much more settled now, knowing how general public perception of this movie is, and, like, what the movie is by, or what the movie is perceived as by the public. People thinking of it simply as a disco movie is probably to their benefit. As well, you know, because it just kind of creates a vibe for their music as well. Like, who doesn't do the, you know, the dance while you're singing Stayin' Alive, you know, like all that kind of stuff.
I know the Bee Gees went on after disco became wildly unpopular. To write songs, people miss iconic songs for them. And I know a few of them, I believe as Maurice in particular, had some qualms about it. Like, these are our songs. We should be the ones performing them and stuff. But I know, at least I think it was Maurice had qualms about writing songs for other people to begin with. So, similar sentiment of, and why did I give them my song? So, I don't know how they felt with this, but. Yeah.
You know what? I was just thinking, and this is gonna come out of nowhere because this is totally divorced from anything we've been talking about. But I feel like if this movie had been the Joker movie, it would have. Oh my god! I feel like this would have fit perfectly as like the Joker movie that came out a few years
okay,
ago.
Okay, Clay. So you're just gonna steal my points? Because wait, you know what the Joker movie is? It's a Scorsese movie is what it is. This is what I'm saying. It would have been crazy. If it was like a Scorsese character study, and I'm sorry I used that word.
It's
maybe,
okay.
Maybe we'll get bleeped.
Yeah, well, I can go back and bleep it.
Whoops.
Yeah, okay, this is getting, this is, don't worry, I'll go back and find a way to edit.
Whoops. I forgot that we weren't just talking normally. Yeah. We were on a radio show for a second there, guys.
That'll be fantastic. Yeah, comedic relief after talking about like assault and suicide or half suicide. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. The time that I say a bad word is when I literally just get mad because a point of mine is reused. No, but I agree with you, Clay, generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it had been Joker, it would have been freaking crazy. There
it
we go.
It would have.
Frickin'.
Yeah. Joker with the Bee Gees would have been. You would have had to have given it the Oscar at that point, like, no matter.
Honestly.
Yeah, I honestly think the Bee Gees would have made that movie. Just, like, imagine those comedy scenes, but with the Bee Gees playing, or any of his dancing scenes.
Yes.
Okay, so I have another question for you guys about the movie. So, mm-hmm. Going back to, like, it as a musical, how did you guys feel about the dance numbers? Because I have some thoughts about that myself.
They were so clean. So good. They okay, not all of them slapped.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
What's the one he dances to? John Travolta's You Should Be Dancing when Stephanie doesn't show up to the club that night. And I think he goes and tries to do the thing with the net after. So that scene. That dance was good. And he really popped off.
Yes.
And yes, right?
Yeah,
it's the best scene of the movie, in my opinion. And I was going to ask what you guys think the best scene of the movie is. 100%. For me, that's the best scene in the movie. It's such a good dance. And he's so good.
Oh, I'm with you.
He was so good in that. In that specific dance.
Yes. Yeah. That rivals, like, the Napoleon Dynamite dance scene to me.
Yes. That's what I was thinking. I was literally thinking it was Napoleon Dynamite dancing while I was watching that. Like,
yes, exactly.
I'm sure that Napoleon Dynamite. I'm sure that Napoleon Dynamite got some stuff from Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah,
it had to have.
No, I'm with you.
Because that was so similar.
The dancing was so interesting to me because, like, you would have like that like scene with John Travolta where he's like popping off, and then you had like the dance competition where like. You know, the black couple and the Puerto Ricans, like, absolutely go ham. And, like,
yes.
They tear it up. But then you have, like, these other scenes where it's, like, all the Italians just, like, on the dance floor, like, doing these, like, half-hearted, like they're, like, half-heartedly dancing, like, all in lines. And it looks terrible. And, like, none of them look like they
yes.
know how to dance. And it's, like, so
yeah,
uncomfortable.
Like, there's a really ugly version of, like, the cha-cha slide.
Yes.
Thing.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's... That's a perfect way to say it. They were, like, in formation for the cha-cha slide, like, doing, like, hip thrusts. And I was like, what is it? Who choreographed this? Like,
And all of the mist. All of the mist. There's so much mist on that disco
yes.
floor. Consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like that wasn't bad. It was just something I noticed.
I don't know. It was
hot in there. It's making it foggy.
Yeah. I loved, because this is at the point where I still thought the movie was a comedy. Like I still thought the movie was a joke, like, at the beginning. And so you have, like, John Travolta, like, going and doing these terrible dance moves where he just, like, points his finger and like moves his hips or like whatever. Like, okay, like the dance scenes in the beginning to me, I didn't think were that like impressive. But then like you have like those scenes paired with like girls coming up to John Travolta and be like, "Can I please wipe your forehead?" Like, and
It was so
it's
funny.
such a funny juxtaposition to go from that to like people just idolizing him. Like,
Yeah.
it just, oh my
I
gosh.
gotta say my second
Yeah, I feel
favorite.
like. Oh, go ahead, Grace.
I was just gonna say my second favorite dance scene is with him practicing with Stephanie, and they like are holding hands and they're swinging in a circle. And I guess there's like a camera guy in the middle, or like John Travolta's holding the camera, but it's just like the camera spinning around with one of their faces in it, and they're making these weird facial expressions. And that was hilarious. Just to go on the comedy part, I thought that was great. I was laughing.
Yeah, I like their practice to more than a woman, way more than I like their final dance to more than a woman. I
Yes.
thought that was actually really interesting how they filmed it, like especially like when they were spinning around and how the camera would like track their faces. I thought that was cool. Generally, but I think like again, like what you said, like that scene where he's dancing to "You Should Be Dancing," it's such a great scene, and I feel like all of that, you know, can I wipe your sweat or something that said, like all of the adoration should come from like that scene should be earlier in the movie to establish how good he is at dancing rather than where it is, because it's like he has this adoration that you don't maybe feel is quite earned because you just haven't seen him prove himself as a great dancer yet.
But I
I don't
also
know.
feel like I knew that scene was coming. Like, that's just something I've heard people talk about. Like, have you ever seen John Travolta dancing the Bee Gees? So I knew that scene was coming. So I feel like if it had happened so early in the movie, just because I knew it was coming, and the rest of the movie had been like the first half and the second half, it would have been like just forcing myself to sit through the rest of it.
You're just waiting for
I was like, I'm
that
ready for it. I was like, I'm
the
ready for it's
whole time.
iconic.
Yeah, no, Grace is right about that. Like, it's that's the redeeming scene in my mind of the movie. Like, I mean, it doesn't redeem all of the bad stuff in the movie, and I don't think this movie's like terrible or anything, but there's
It's
certainly a lot of problematic
problematic.
stuff in it. It's problematic for sure.
I think
But a
I
lot
would.
of the dancing scenes, I think, redeem it a little bit.
And
Make it watchable.
I think that's like an interesting point as well, is like we kind of talked about that last dance scene during the competition being like underwhelming, and I think that was on purpose. Because, like, to me, that final twist in the end where he realizes this life he's been living is, like, bad and the people he's with are bad and he wants to try to get out of it, it kind of comes in that moment of him winning that tournament knowing that
He wasn't good enough.
he wasn't good enough and the Puerto Ricans were way better than him. And so, in winning the competition, I feel like he kind of gets, because, you know, for the whole movie, we've had, like, the disco as like this haven where you can escape from your worldly troubles and just jam out, and you don't have to think about work or who you really are or, you know, what you're doing with your life. And in that kind of moment where it's kind of like where he wins, he like the outside world is like even seeping into the disco club too, and he kind of realizes that. And it's kind of that like initial domino that kind of kicks off the chain reaction to like the ending of the movie, which we've kind of discussed. So that's kind of what makes that work for me. So even though like some of the dancing I think is good and some of it's weird, I think actually like in certain cases like that, I think the weird dancing actually kind of contributes to the narrative in a good way.
I agree with you there. I agree with you there. It definitely does contribute to the narrative, especially in that final scene, because the whole point of the scene is for Travolta to like be like, we weren't the best dancers out there. And they weren't. And they didn't have the best dance out there. And yeah, I think you talking about it as like as part of Travolta's larger narrative and like the disco as some haven, I think that's destroyed. That makes a lot of sense, and it actually makes me appreciate a little bit about the end of, like, the end sequence of events and how they're supposed to affect Travolta. Not that they needed to choose the events that they did, especially the last couple, which are just way over the top.
Yes.
But, yeah, I think it does make sense for where Tony Travolta's character ends up.
I wanna just go back to the competition scene real quick, just for a quick note. I felt like Stephanie in that scene, the writing for that was like out of character for her. Like, I feel like we got this vision of a woman who is from the better part of town. She's well educated. She is tolerant of others. She's respectful of others. And in the dance scene, like when Tony's having this realization of, oh, I only got that because I'm Italian in the Italian dance club and not because I deserved it, I feel like it was weird that she was not, like, on that same level with him. Mm-hmm. I felt like the whole point was that she was already there. She was already the more mature and educated and better person, the person that he is striving to be. Like, at the end scene, he's like, I want to do what you're doing. I want to get out. So I felt like it was weird that she wasn't registering that, not caring about that. So yeah, just a quick note for the writing. I thought that was really weird.
It's a really good point.
That is a good point. Yeah, and maybe that's just because they want that realization to come as something that Travolta comes to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's his change, it's not her change, because she would have always realized that or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's not influencing him to recognize that his friends are shit, right?
Yeah.
Or at least not directly. And I guess that's maybe what they're trying to go for there. I agree with you. It is a little bit out of character, though.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that kind of just goes back to what we said earlier, just about, like, the periphery characters in this movie are just really not that well written or consistent. Like, you just, at the end of the day, you can kind of get the impression of who you think they're supposed to be, but they're never written with enough, like, consistency that you get a clear impression of who they're supposed to be and what their story is and how they're exactly supposed to relate, which is kind of just something I was overall, like, just disappointed with in the movie.
Yeah. Definitely. And there's like one scene, I don't know why I'm thinking about it now, but, like, where he and I think Stephanie are sitting at a bench, and then for some reason John Travolta's, like, about to cry. And I was just like, wait, am I supposed to be feeling emotional here?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
The movie goes for a couple of emotional beats that just don't hit because they don't pay real attention to Travolta's psyche enough.
That's the scene where he and Stephanie are sitting looking out at the bridge, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
We had that same, like, it does the, it's like a 1.5 second shot of them together on the bench, and it's like, it's not even, like, it's so not noticeable. Like, just his eyes are red and they look water. He's not even, like, crying. He just looks watery. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't notice it because the way they shoot it is so big. Like, the frame is so big. There's so much stuff in it, like her, the bench, stuff happening in the background, and it's so short, and they never go back to it.
Yeah.
Which is
strange. I was just waiting for, like, the breaking point to come for Travolta. And I think it does, obviously, in that scene.
But if it doesn't,
obviously, the final dance scene.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't come, like, emotionally.
Yes.
If you get what I'm saying.
It,
like,
wasn't.
I think the How Deep Is Your Love train scene is also an emotional scene, but I still feel like it's papered over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you're just, he's not allowed to feel.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it was like after the shot of him crying, it was like after that was over, you realized what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I wish they had gone back and fleshed that out a bit more.
Quick trivia point.
Agreed.
This is my ADHD acting out. This is not related. But, so, this is just general movie trivia, but, this film was actually based off an essay. Grace, do you remember what the essay is called?
Oh, yeah, it was, I think, just actually inspired by a really short article written in the New York Times, I want to say, by Nick Cohn, who was a journalist. I think he was from the UK, too. It's called The Tribal Rights of the New Saturday Night.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and that's, do you want me to talk about it, or you want to talk
about it? I can talk about it,
okay.
But you can talk about it, too.
You summarize it. I guess that's
what I'm saying. Yeah. But basically the article kind of just like outlines everything that we've been talking about like the dance club kind of as like this like escape for people, and it kind of talks about like tension between different like, you know, ethnic and racial groups that we kind of see play out through the movie. But it's kind of obviously the source material, but the interesting like movie trivia part I found in this, that would be interesting to see if there is a relationship, but the main character in the article is named, the one that obviously John Travolta's character is based off of, is named Vincent in the article. And mm-hmm. So I obviously don't know, but I would be willing to bet a lot of money that that's where Tarantino pulled Vincent Vega from, like that name in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. It's possible. Mm-hmm.
Knowing Tarantino,
I wouldn't put it past Tarantino. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him.
Did you have a...
One thing that...
Oh, sorry, Jacob.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, I was just gonna... We don't have to talk about this right now, but I do want to address... For the people who know about the full R-rated version of this film and still consider it a cult classic, I'm wondering... Like, do we see the... Because usually, like, there's a lot of... For example, The Big Lebowski is a messy-ass film. It's a cult classic because it's super endearing, right? There's something about it. And mm-hmm. I guess the question that I have is, like, would this... Like, is there something about this movie that would make it a cult classic in your eyes or in, you know, in... Or that you could see would make it one in other people's eyes?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Definitely the Bee Gees.
Yeah, the soundtrack.
Yeah. Right.
The disco theme in general, the dance scene, that one where he's dancing to You Should Be Dancing. But yeah, that was interesting. I was actually talking to my mom about it earlier today because I called her and I was like, oh my gosh, y'all talk about the dance scene. Like, oh my gosh, Saturday Night Fever. But you didn't tell me how difficult it was to watch. And I don't know, I think cause she was seeing it when she was younger. She had seen the full version, obviously, when she was older, adult, wasn't just watching it on cable TV as a kid. But I don't know. Maybe it's that the dance scene just overpowers and that's what sticks in your head. It could be, I mean, her answer was like, it was in the 1970s. Like it was just different back then. So there's so much history here to unpack with, feminism and women's rights. And this discussion about, because so earlier in wonderful history, assault was seen as a random guy jumps out of the bushes and assaults you, and they were just like 60s and 70s just starting that discussion of assault being between you and someone you know, like in a relationship, in a marriage, because it was still legal to assault your wife in a marriage up until that point. And so I feel like when it came out, it was watching a different movie than what we are watching now. We have so many other filters, such as assault is bad, and assault can happen between someone that you know. Assault can happen to you by someone that you like, by someone that you've consented to before.
Right.
And so I think part of it's just like, and when you hear cult classic, you're hearing it from the generation before us or the generation before them. And I think they did watch a different movie.
Yeah.
So,
maybe physically and then also just, sociohistorically as well. You know, they were just in a different time period.
Yeah, like not just the
And
watching it on cable and having it censored, but for those who
right.
watched the full movie, I think it was just also a different understanding.
There's also an element to like watching a movie maybe when you're younger, like maybe when you're a kid and you're not able to like fully grow. Like I'm sure what this movie came out in 77, like I'm sure your mom was really young when she saw this. Like I doubt she saw it when she came, it came out, but I bet she was pretty young. And I know like just from my own like personal experience, like watching movies, and I'm sure you guys too do too, like watching movies when you're young versus when you're older, there's so many things that you pick up on afterwards that you maybe didn't notice beforehand. So maybe there's this like, you, because we're saying that generally we're hearing this from people like a generation or two ago, and so maybe that's also a source of where that sort of status is coming from.
I do want to say though, for all of its faults, I think the movie tackles the whole issue of consent and assault decently for when it was released. And I think they do a decent job, not in the way the guys of the film unpack it later, because they don't unpack it later. But specifically in the way the women address it. So the shots during that assault of Annette, you're getting a close-up of her face and her crying and her saying, no, I don't want this, I don't want this. So they're acknowledging the lack of consent and her emotion in it. And then also that final scene where John Travolta goes and sees Stephanie, and Stephanie basically says, like, this is the first time I've let a known assaultist into my house. And that's a big moment too, for her to recognize him that way and say that out loud in the movie. So I definitely don't think they unpacked it from the guy's perspective, and I think they could have done more with saying consent good, assault bad. But I feel like for the time period, they decently covered, or they decently got across that it was not good.
Definitely not ideal by modern standards, for sure.
No. Agreed on both fronts there.
So just, I guess I feel like we're kind of ready to move into like conclusions and like final thoughts on the movie. This is probably, I don't know if you feel the same way, Chico, but I feel like this is probably the most difficult film we've discussed so far on the show. Like, I'm not sure that there's any like blurb I can give in these final few minutes here to like really summarize my thoughts on it, other than just that there are parts of it that I like and are good, and there are other parts that are really bad and I don't like. And so I think it's interesting. It was engaging for pretty much the whole time, but I don't know if I could recommend it to people, or if I would, I would give it with a huge disclaimer beforehand.
Yeah, I think I'm right with you there on, I mean, I'm sure we feel somewhat differently about certain things in the movie, but generally the same general vibe that there's a lot of things there's a lot of things I don't like, and there's a few things I like. And I don't feel like it's a must-see. You can listen to Bee Gees music on your own.
Honestly.
But it's something I would caution people if they're going to see. Just, there's sensitive topics in there, and it could be very triggering for some people as well. But with that, I would say if you feel like you're up to it, it's certainly an interesting movie in a lot of ways that I didn't think it was going to be. And for that reason, I would say maybe it's worth a watch.
You will
just
think
depending
about
on
it after you have
your
finished
stat,
it.
where you are. Yeah.
Grace, do you want to give your final?
Yeah, just with the rec. I would not recommend it as a disco movie, because that's what it was recommended to
Yeah.
me as. That's what people see it as. That's the weird public takeaway. So if you want to watch something that is really gonna challenge your understanding of what the movie's trying to say, and if you want to watch something that's difficult to watch but maybe important to see some parts, I would say go for it, but don't watch it thinking it's a disco movie, and try very hard not to watch it and let it affect how you hear the Bee Gees music. Because the Bee Gees, to be clear one more time, did not know what this movie was about. So there is no deeper meaning behind the Bee Gees songs. Don't read into that way. Don't ruin it for yourself. Because that's not what it was.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay.
Listen to the
Well,
Bee Gees without
yes.
yes.
Listen to the Bee Gees first.
Yes.
Yes.
Just get, yeah,
That's
get.
what I did.
Me too.
You will also enjoy the movie more if you see the Bee Gees first and you just like
Yes.
start singing with the movie when it gets to
Yes.
those like dance scenes. It
Yeah.
will make the experience more enjoyable.
100%. I'm right there with you. I enjoyed those dance scenes more because I could sing to the Bee Gees music. This movie would have been
Exactly.
absolutely terrible. If the Bee Gees didn't do the soundtrack, this movie would have been terrible.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And if you don't
Because I
want to
just wouldn't have
watch,
been entertained.
yeah. And if you don't want to watch, like, the whole gruesome, unnecessary, at times terrible movie, just looking up, like, John Travolta dances to the Bee Gees. And
Or
that's the scene you need. That's it.
turn the movie off right after he gives the award to the Puerto Ricans. Like,
Yes, don't go
just
further.
use that as the ending in your headcanon and just don't watch the rest of the movie. And then that's another way I would probably recommend watching it to
That's
people.
or skipping right
Yeah.
until the very end where they're like, we can be friends.
Yeah.
That's a good one too.
Yeah. You'll just be a little bit you'll just be a little bit perplexed as to why she uses the R-est word to describe
Audrey, yeah, why she
John
hates
Travolta
sexual
in that.
assault.
Yeah.
Yes. Why she says that. Yeah, exactly. You're right.
All right, well, I think that about wraps up our time for the show. Grace, I want to thank you for being our first ever guest on the show and
Yeah.
for watching the movie and
Thank
coming on
you
with
for
us.
having me. This was awesome. Let's do a different movie next time.
Yeah.
Yes. So thanks for coming on, Grace. It was really fun.
Yeah, it was good talking with y'all.
Of course, thank you for joining me again, Jacob. I always enjoy doing this with you recording on Friday mornings.
Yeah, I'm loving it too. It's a good part of the routine for sure.
It is a
So
good part of the routine.
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. And I'm sure we'll pick a. I do want to pick one where we're divisive, like not just that the movie's divisive, but one where we are divided on how we feel about the
Opinion.
movie,
Yes.
on
Already
opinion.
concerned if we were divided
But
on this one.
yeah.
Yeah. No, I just come in just being like, oh, I absolutely love the film. There's nothing problematic about
Yeah, that little
it.
scene with Annette, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, that would I think you guys would have to disown me if I did that
Yeah,
as a
probably.
friend.
But if you're listening to this as it airs, thank you for tuning in with us. And if you're watching this online, thank you for seeking this out and sticking to the end of our rambling. But yeah, thank you for watching us, and we'll catch you guys next week.